ABC.
I've always loved America. Well, mostly loved America. As a young bloody one, I went with a couple of friends of mine, Ray and Ernie, after we'd worked a few years and saved our money and went over and bought an old Chevy in Los Angeles and drove it across America, west coast to east, north to south, down to Florida, through Montana, Dakota, and everywhere else, probably 40 states. Fascinating place. Loved it outside the cities. Wasn't quite so sure about the big cities. And they seem to be a lot worse now, but it's just a fascinating country, isn't it? For better or worse. As always, plenty happening there, which politically at least seems as divided and polarised as I've ever seen it. And I think it's really troubling. But you sometimes get a different perspective from the outside looking in than you do when you're actually living there. And we hear a lot about American federal politics, but not always the state politics. And many of the states, I imagine, are going okay. Next year's presidential election has virtually begun, and all thoughts the majority of voters on both sides seem to be that they don't want either. The early favourites to fight it out are President Joe Biden and former President Donald Trump. The independents don't want them. Republicans don't necessarily want Trump. Democrats don't necessarily want Biden, but Donald Trump is way ahead in the early primary polling. From a distance, considering the baggage that they both carry, it seems almost incredible that in a country of 330 million, many of them very bright, one of these two is going to be president again. That's the odds at the moment. Now, there's a long way to go and much can change, but this week and next, I'll chat with TJ O'Hara, an old friend who's written several excellent books on the problems with the left and the right of the politics in America. And he cared so much about it that he actually ran as an independent candidate for president. And he joins me now from San Diego in California. Hey, TJ.
Hi, Greg. How are you?
It's lovely to hear your voice, mate. Are things on the inside as bad as they look from the outside?
I think your description was pretty accurate, actually. Disturbingly so. It's a mess over here. We seem to find new ways to embarrass ourselves. But that's politics in the United States these days.
Yeah, but does it cut deeper than the politics? I guess the politics, TJ, in the end, is a reflection of societal matters and all kinds of other things going on. Why is your country so polarized at the moment? Why is the level of anger so high?
Power and money. The easiest way to divide the electorate is to use negative emotions like fear, and that's what the parties have become extremely good at doing. You know, you mentioned we're a country of over 330 million. Roughly 165 million of our citizens are eligible to run for president, yet the best candidates the parties can find are President Biden and former President Trump, and that's a sad commentary.
Is there a reason for that?
Well, I think they default to what they're comfortable with, and to candidates in the case of President Biden that the Democrats think they can control, candidates in the case of Trump, for the exact opposite reason. You know, one of the challenges with Trump, many of these pre-pandemic policies were working, but his decision-making was always random. He was the poster child of clinical narcissism, and his post-presidency decision-making has been an absolute disaster. But from a communication perspective, he's inarticulate and often crass. Now, that sounds bad, but his common man approach increased political interest among the masses. And in my opinion, that's what the Republican Party fears. They fear a backlash from his supporters that could fracture the party if he doesn't have its support. And the fear of a third party run by Trump is forcing them not to push back hard against him. And that won't subside until after the first primary, because that's when the sore loser laws will kick in.
So that's really interesting, TJ. So that's one of the reasons that the other Republican candidates to this point, with the exception of Chris Christie, who's in there obviously to try to take Trump out, but he probably won't succeed. But they're very careful about how they criticize Trump because they need not to get too many of Trump's supporters offside.
That's absolutely correct. And it's a shame because the Republican Party actually has a number of higher quality candidates, but it's afraid to push them at this time. And I think it's afraid because they want to make sure there's not a third-party run or an independent run by Trump.
In the end, it wasn't the last straw that broke the camel's back. It was the accumulation of straws. I'm just wondering if the metaphorical camel Trump is building up so many straws with so many legal issues going on all around the place, Is he any guarantee to be the nominee?
I don't think so. Would certainly hope that we have a more informed electorate because people are becoming more interested in politics and they're taking a little more time than they used to. They don't just default to one candidate or another, and there's enough name recognition out there that I think if the media starts exposing other candidates, he very well may not win the nomination.
Who would, if he doesn't, who would be most likely? We're hearing a lot about the Florida governor, Ron DeSantis. Would he be most likely to be the one if it wasn't Trump?
You know, I don't know if it would be Ron DeSantis or not. He's been an effective governor for Florida. However, in my opinion, again, he's mispositioned himself. Rather than just positioning himself as a proponent of Trump's policies without the personality baggage, he's positioned himself of a more conservative version of Trump. And he's taken on a lot of battles that he doesn't need to engage in. And he's going to have to retrace his steps if he wants to overcome that. But you've got other candidates, one that you and I have talked about privately, but Tim Scott. He's an excellent candidate. He has a tremendous backstory. He has experience. He's worked across the aisles. And if the Republican Party was strategically astute, which it's not, it might consider pushing him and pairing him with a Nikki Haley or a Miami Mayor Francis Suarez, who's now in the race, because that could hollow out the core of the Democratic Party's core constituency, which are women, blacks, and Hispanics. They count on those votes. They assume the Republicans can attract them. And if they ran a ticket like that with Senator Scott and either the former ambassador and governor Nikki Haley or Miami's Mayor Francis Suarez, you'd have a very interesting ticket on the Republican side that would be difficult to attack.
See, that's very interesting because for those who aren't paying close attention yet in the upcoming primary elections, Tim Scott is a senator from, I think, South Carolina. He's African-American, dragged himself up from the wrong side of the tracks. It's a very positive story, very optimistic story, and maybe at a time of great division when people are feeling negative about their country, that might resonate.
Absolutely.
Yeah. What about on the other side? You've got a president who, you know, people are giving him all kinds of medical diagnoses, but he's clearly infirm. I mean, he's 81, 82 at the next election. And Joe, I never liked Joe Biden much back when he was in his prime, but he's a long way away from his prime. Will he be the contender, do you think?
I think he thinks he'll be the
He thinks, yeah.
I don't know if the party will allow him to run. It depends on what happens on the other side. If Trump looks like he's going to be the nominee, then I think the party will allow Biden to run against him because they think he can beat him. If Trump is not the candidate, I don't think Joe Biden can beat any of the other Republicans that are running. And I think the world suspects that we have a paper presidency. No one is really sure who's running the country at this point. And when President Biden says to the world, just watch me. And when we do, it's not a pretty sight, to your point. He seems to be physically frail. He's often confused. But we have a media that bumped him up in stature as well. When Trump tells a lie or blatantly exaggerates, the media eviscerates him. When Joe Biden tells a lie or exaggerates, we're told those are merely gaffes or they're dismissed as that's just Joe being Joe. So, you know, I think one of the challenges, decisions seem to be driven by identity politics.
Yes.
And the agenda of the Democratic Socialist fringe of his party, which is much like its counterpart on the other end of the spectrum, what the president and his supporters like to call extreme MAGA Republicans. Both groups are really small, and they are extreme, and neither one should be a dominant sphere of influence when it comes to presidential decision-making.
Yeah, let me ask you about that. Your vice president is Kamala Harris, and I think people on both sides believe she's done a terrible job and she's not up to the presidency and she's a heartbeat away of an elderly man of being the president. And they're starting to talk of possible candidates if Joe Biden doesn't run. And one of them, of course, is your governor in California, Gavin Newsom. What do you make of him?
Well, California Governor Newsom is priming himself to be the party savior if President Biden decides not to run and VP Harris doesn't make the cut. He's already survived a recall election here, which doesn't suggest he was doing a great job. That's a little bit like escaping an impeachment. But I will tell you, tongue firmly in cheek, under his leadership, California has risen to number one in the nation in a variety of areas. Unfortunately, That includes homelessness, addiction, and welfare payments.
That's not good.
Education scores are plummeting as well. But you have to keep in mind, to be fair to him, he's been able to accomplish this while turning a $97.5 billion surplus into a $31.5 billion deficit. The LA Times did a poll the other day and came out and said 4 out of 10 Californians are contemplating leaving the state. maybe that's the way to address the immigration problem. Making president, nobody will want to come here.
This is wonderful. We'll talk again next week, TJ, and I'll look forward to it. But before you go, we have listeners in Rockhampton this afternoon as well. And you love your tennis. You're a very fine tennis player. And one of your heroes, of course, was Rocket Rod Laver.
Absolutely. Yeah, one of my favorite times just a few years ago, I think you and I have talked about this privately, I had the opportunity to run into Rod at dinner, and as a boy growing up, he was my hero. And I would play against a wall, and as I told him that night, I must have beaten him 1,000 times when he was just that wall.
A lot of kids did the same.
We never got the opportunity to play, but we had a great time that night. He's a terrific individual and just an awesome legend in the game of tennis. And wish him all the best. Hope he stays healthy forever. You should be very, very proud of Rod Laver.
Yeah, he's a great man. Who was your favorite player out there when you played and were on the circuit?
Anyone I could beat.
Was there one you really loved to watch and just be on the court with?
Well, there was one I was a little more close to, and he has a stadium named after him too, just like Rod Laver, and that was Arthur Ashe. I got along really well. We occasionally played doubles. We practiced together occasionally, and I just thought the world of him. He was so much more than a tennis player.
Yes.
You would have loved political discussions with Arthur. He, again, is another one of those people. He just is at the summit of the game, not only in his playing ability, but at the summit of the game because of the person he was.
Yeah, tennis nobility. Well said. Lovely to talk to you, TJ. Always is. We'll do it again next week, yeah?
Sounds like a plan.
Strategic consultant, author, speaker, books available online, TJ O'Hara from the U.S.